Welcome to Nintendo Dads episode 147, recorded on September 20th, 2017. On tonight's episode, we discuss recent news like Iwata left something in the Switch or someone left something for Iwata in the Switch. I don't know. We need to figure it out. And indies are absolutely killing it right now on Nintendo systems. We're going to talk about tons of games we've been playing and a whole lot more. Zach, cue the music.
And welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Dads Podcast. My name is Zach Erickson, and tonight is September 20th, 2017. Joining me tonight from the land of rainbows and leprechauns, Justin Maston. What's going on, Justin?
Nothing much, buddy. Yeah, no, thank you for having me back. I'm super excited. In less than like 24 hours from now, I'm going to be in Birmingham getting ready to attend EGX. And man, I have secured some awesome interviews, some game demos. So I am super pumped and excited to be doing this. So yeah.
Hey, Justin.
Yeah.
I just wanted to remind you that that's not in Germany.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know where it is. You guys don't. I'm the one who's educated enough to know where countries are. But let me tell you, I just about screamed at my phone when I heard you guys be like, I think it's in Germany. And I was like, no, it's not.
I do have to say that right there. I have to stop you. I don't sound like Kermit the Frog.
Oh, no, that was my impression. That was my impression of.
Hey, it's Germany. All right.
Speaking of Kermit and speaking of a frog, Jesse Waldeck, VG Tribune. How are you today, sir?
Hey, all. I'm good.
Nice. Okay.
All right. Kermit the Frog here.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Oh boy. Oh boy.
Are we just gonna break into a Kermit the Frog competition here?
Yeah. Entire time.
Speaking of being competitive, joining us as well, Marty Estes from the Land of the South. What's up, good sir?
Thanks for noticing me.
Nice, right on. Well, you guys, we have a ton of games to talk about. I don't know what happened.
I'm so confused right now.
But we
I feel like we're drowning in games.
I know. It actually is kind of true. We got we all are playing all sorts of fun stuff. So we're gonna spend a lot of time with that. But first we gotta get into the news and let's do it. Wait. And the news is brought to you by Patreon.com/NintendoDads, where for as little as a dollar a month, you can contribute to the best Nintendo Dads podcast on the internet. And so with that, you guys, we have so many new patrons. It's crazy. And first off, welcome to all our new who are our new patrons this week?
We've got five new patrons this week. Jason Bryant, Mike Jukes, Brandman, Andrew Watson, and Amanda R. Actually, Amanda joined in and then upped her pledge directly after joining. So it was like, hey, I like this. Nope, I just like it even more.
Yep, absolutely. Which is, man.
And, man, we're, you know what, Zach? We're $5 from our next goal.
I noticed that. $5 is, you know what? For $5 a month, you can give somebody in the Patreon in Patreon land, $50 eShop card, and it might even be you. So, if you are holding out on, you know, supporting the show and being a patron, now is the time. Destiny is calling. Patreon.com/NintendoDads, and you can.
And you know, we're talking about other goals past $300. We've thrown around the idea of a Nintendo Dads holiday calendar.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, yeah, 400.
It's Kevin. Nintendo Dads Fireman.
She doesn't like hearing a busy signal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. I'm up for it though. Seriously. I know you guys were joking about the fire.
Just for curiosity, how much of the funding would go to body wax?
It doesn't.
Because it doesn't. None of that. None of it goes to manscaping.
Nope. You get that's on your dime.
I think I might break the budget on that one. All right. Speaking of not breaking budgets, speaking of amazing things, let's jump into, you know what, Zach, every episode at the end, you're like, hey, change the world. Somebody did change the world for us, didn't they, Zach?
Yeah, they did. And
you know who did?
Jason.
Jason, who I believe is also our new Patreon supporter.
Mm-hmm.
So Jason writes on an iTunes review, woohoo, finally have an iPod that lets me leave reviews. Listen since beta, and well, thanks, Dad, I fell out of love with Nintendo, but you seem to set that fire roaring again. Bought a Wii U and countless games, 100 Bloody Amiibo, and I'm proud Switch owner. You need a warning. You need a warning label. Warning: Nintendo ads may cause you to spend the stupid amounts of money. Keep up the great work. You guys are awesome. See you in the line chat 5 a.m. every week. Cheers, Dads. Jason. Jason, thanks for leaving that awesome review on iTunes. We're sorry that we make you poor, but thank you for being part of this wonderful community. I love it.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's part of the new iOS 11 update. Lets you do reviews in the podcast app. I didn't look into it, but that
I don't know.
That's
dude.
likely what happened.
Maybe.
Interesting.
Thank you,
Interesting.
Apple. And if you have an iOS 11, go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, and you will change the world as well. So thank you, everybody. You guys are awesome. Let's get into the news. We're trying something a little bit new, just to talk about how the sausage is made a little bit today. We're gonna try something new. We're gonna try some big top stories, a couple of things, and then we'll have some headlines, quick fire style. See how it goes. But we're
kind of like Nintendo.
Yeah,
like
it works for the directs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hey, you know what? Yeah. I thought that we were just being smart.
No, we're definitely stealing that from somewhere.
Yeah, I like it.
That's how, we're borrowing. We're lifting the idea, I guess, is the proper way of saying that.
We're being inspired by.
Isn't that how podcasting works?
It totally is. I heard someone, here's a great example. Recently, Bobby opened up a channel called Nintendo Guru Asks. Nintendo Guru Asks. Does that sound like something that we've done in the past?
I don't know.
We have a section called Justin Asks? I can't remember.
I don't know.
Yeah, we do. Of course, in all fairness, I stole that from Adam Leonard, and his session was Adam Asks. But I digress. Let's go into the news, shall we?
Let's do it. A
bumper for that.
Yeah, I already played it.
I'd like to hear it again.
What? Who do you think you are? Hang on. Let me find it now. Listen. There you go.
That's right, Sam Boy. That's right.
Before we start this, this reminds me of one of the DJs I listened to when I was in high school. He always ended the show with, "If you steal from me, you've stolen twice."
So Bobby's stolen three times.
And so, and now you, if you steal what Jesse just said, you've stolen three times. So there you go. All right, let's get into the top stories of the week. First one here that we want to talk about, and I want somebody to explain this to me. There is a way now to play golf on the Switch, NES golf, and it's not just – here's the thing is if you see this headline, you'll think, oh, great, somebody like – there's the ROM for NES golf in here somewhere. No, there's motion controls, like on-screen motion controls for NES golf. What is going on? Somebody explain this to me.
Go ahead, Jesse. I'm sorry.
All right. So my understanding about all this is modders and data miners have found several weeks ago that there was an NES emulator packed into every Switch called Flog. And they're like, why is it named that? It makes no sense. So then later on they found out, it's got golf in it, which Flog is golf backwards.
Whoa. I wish I had an X-Files cue on this right now, but
So then as they started poking around with that a little bit more, they found out that it's actually triggerable in specific situations, which sounds like it's got to be on a Switch that has not been accessed, has not accessed the network yet.
Mm-hmm.
So
here, hang on. Continue.
It's got to have the system date of July 11th, which is the date of Iwata's passing.
All right.
And can you turn that down? That's loud. And then at the main menu, you do the motion controls kind of similar to the Nintendo's Direct directly to you. That's kind of the motion. And that triggered it.
What?
And the game is playable. It's not fully complete, but you can choose an option. You can launch a course and start playing it.
Yeah, and the really cool thing about this is that not only do you do the direct motion with the Joy-Cons, but when you trigger the game, a sound clip plays from your Switch, which is the word direct in Japanese being said by Iwata.
What?
And on top of that, the theory is now that this is a lot of people are calling this an omamori, which is an omamori is something that you can buy at a shrine in Japan, and keeping one close to you will protect you or give good luck to the owner.
Wow.
And so what the theory is that this is Nintendo's way of embedding that in the game as a tribute to Iwata. And I, like, I don't know, just like something about this story has just,
Sorry,
it has hooked me this week. I mean, if there is any doubt that that man was loved at Nintendo, I think you can erase that now.
I suddenly feel bad that I'm playing the X-Files music underneath all of this right now. Because
And then, for those who didn't know, Iwata wrote the Golf NES game back in like 84 when it was Famicom.
So yeah.
Was like one of his first projects with the Famicom.
So, I mean, and for the most part, obviously, and guys, correct me if I'm wrong here, as you're telling the story, and there's been the news or headlines on this, there's a lot of videos on it this week as well on YouTube, so you can check it out. But can I replicate this right now? Can I go and try this on my Switch? I can't, right?
My understanding
you have to have a factory Switch that has not been connected to the internet.
As soon as it connects to the internet, what happens?
And the difference is you can set the time and date on your Switch.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if it's inside the OS, there is a part of the code that sets the time and date based on your internet connection. Kind of just like your iPhone does.
Sure.
Right? And so once that's been set internally, yes, you can change it, you know, on the dashboard or whatever, but it's not going to be officially July 11th. Now, when July 11th comes around in 2018, sure, you can emulate it for a day.
Right.
And it'll be the best day. Oh, that's so cool.
That's too bad you didn't know about this, Marty, before you bought that one for your church.
Yeah, no. That was the first thought that I had. I was like, man,
A week, eh? Yeah.
And I've heard of modders are actually trying to open up their Switch, take out the battery, take out the backup battery, trying to force it to a factory reset condition to try to redo this, which that sounds like a lot of work for them, maybe, and potentially system breaking.
Yeah.
I think it just shows that I think people feel like that, you know, the Switch was really the last, to use a term here, the last gift that Iwata gave to the world, you know, and really it kind of is. I mean, Iwata had a different way of looking at video gaming, and we know that from just his time with Nintendo, and for him to be, you know, kind of, and Miyamoto himself gave an interview not long ago, where earlier this year in time, he called Iwata the head of development for the Switch. So just for all this to be in there is super cool.
And I love the fact that the Switch is 6 months old, and they're finding little tributes like this, right? Like that's fantastic. And I kind of wonder like what other Easter eggs or nuggets are kind of hidden within it that we haven't found yet, or we won't find for several months.
Well, and there's I mean you even see stories of games that are like, you know, years and years and years, like decades old. And they're like, oh, somebody found this new secret in whatever, Donkey Kong or something. I think I saw not too long ago. And it's like, this kind of stuff continues to happen regardless, right? It's pretty, pretty interesting. Yeah. So, very cool. Right on. So, however, that doesn't bring Virtual Console any. Oh, I guess the other thing that I did see, online, as far as speculation goes, is because this actually does have that motion control version of Golf in it, maybe, you know, and you can find screenshots of this online, but this may be an indicator of what might be coming for some of those beefed up Virtual Console games that Nintendo's been talking about. You know, maybe it's taking so long because they're putting motion controls into Golf, or, you know, like things like that. And so that's a possibility, at least. We now at least have confirmation that they have done that, at least for this one game. Or at least that development time has gone towards that. So that's an interesting thing for us to kind of consider as we await the more beefed up Virtual Console games. So we'll see. Any other kinds of like Virtual Console games you guys would want to see? Like how would you add this sort of thing, like the original Legend of Zelda with swipe motion controls, waggle motion controls for the sword? Like, is
that we've seen that before, and
it's coming, confirmed, coming in 2018. Right on. So next up we have Indies is our other top story of the week. So Oceanhorn, Forma 8, Wonder Boy and the Dragon's Trap, and Death Squared have all reported that their sales on the Switch were higher than all other platforms combined.
That's mad.
Which is crazy, right? And I think, you know, I was thinking about this and thinking about why is it such, like, I think first off, the eShop is so easy to get to from, like, as much as the eShop layout kind of sucks, it also is pretty awesome in the fact that it is completely like egalitarian, right? That Nintendo and EA and 2K, right? Like all of these games, all these companies, Ubisoft, all of these different game companies are all put in the same recent releases feed that is chronological only, right? And that's the only thing that it sorts by. And so the most recent games are on the front page of the store every time, which I think is, I mean, obviously it says a lot for how active the platform is as well, but I wouldn't underestimate simply the layout of this platform, and the eShop. I don't know. So it's pretty crazy. Like indies are rocking it right now on the Switch. So I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on this?
Considering the install base of the Switch, approximately 5 million, maybe a little more.
Yeah.
And we haven't heard any more recent numbers lately compared to, what 40 or 50 million PS4s, 30 million Xbox Ones.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it is probably the majority of those console owners, you know, the PS4, Xbox One, probably are not digital purchasers. But the Switch is such a good fit for it, for having smaller games on the go.
Yeah.
Absolutely. On the system.
I think the on-the-go thing is the key there. I mean, you know, if you have a choice between can I play this game anywhere or can I play it just sitting at home?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people are saying that about every game right now. You know,
especially
I can't. Indies, it's yeah. The Switch effect. The Switch effect has been saying about every game, hey, I wish I could play this wherever I'm going.
Yeah.
And that's why we see, you know, such rabid calls to port over like Final Fantasy 15 and other things to the Switch.
Speaking of rabid, I probably put half my time in on TV mode and half time in handheld mode
playing Mario and Rabbids.
Playing the Rabbids game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, and that's the thing is the ability for me with the Switch to like, my wife wants to watch a show, so I take it out of the dock and I play it sitting next to her. Great. Mm-hmm. You know, and I finished a lot of indies that way. And it just, I mean, it feels like a great way to, if you know, the Nindy partnership starting with Wii U has been fantastic for Nintendo and indies. And it just feels even better on the Switch. It feels like there's more respect there. It feels like there's more weight or gravitas there, if that's a word that you want to, like, it's, you know, it's not, oh yeah, we're Nintendo and we make some games and here's some indies too. And we kind of like them. Now it's like, we're all working together to make the Switch a great place.
Yeah.
Check this out.
Okay. So I'm looking on the Switch eShop right now and looking at the best sellers, which is of the past 2 weeks. Nintendo does not actually have a first party game on there until number 8, which is crazy. Well,
I wonder if a little bit of that is also the cartridge versus digital, right?
Potentially.
Potentially, right? Because people could just, I mean, it could be Mario and Rabbids is, you know, number one or number two, right? But unfortunately, just because the fact of that
no, people it buying is number
physically
two.
As opposed to digital, right?
Yeah.
I think Nintendo has in the last, I think, 2 years done a really great job of kind of rebranding their positioning based on where the Wii U was and its struggles to be like, the Wii U and Nintendo is home for Nindies. That's what we want. We got our Nindies. We got an Indies Direct. We got Indies. We want to support them. And I think that has the fostering, the seeds they planted in the Wii U have grown and are being supported in the Switch. And then I think for it to be such a popular device as it is currently, I think for the games to be very easily ported over. And I think that the developers are quick to want to put content there because they understand there is an opportunity. Right. So I think it's just accessibility. And then to the points I'm seeing made here in the chat, I mean, the fact that you can, you know, pick it up and take it with you and on the run and on the go, I think is a huge thing. Right. Mitch says it's because the games are so accessible. You have several different ways to play them. It's the most convenient one at that moment. And I think, you know, it's not a huge shock that the Nindies are kind of killing it right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I'm looking at the eShop here, like number one, Sonic Mania, which I just want everyone to notice. Sonic Mania is number one right now. Number two is
fake news. Fake news.
Number two is Mario and Rabbids, which is a third party game. Like I know it's got Mario in it, but NBA 2K18, then Overcooked, Lego Worlds, Double Dragon 4. Is that what that is? Minecraft, then Mario Kart at number eight. And then what is this? Neurovoider. I had a case of that once. You got to get an ointment. Kingdom, New Lands, Snipper Clips, right? Like it's crazy how many of those are third party games and how many of those are indies. It's pretty impressive. So very, very cool. I'm excited. And who was it this week? Was it Nicholas, right? The indie publisher who has now basically, it wasn't. It was the Stardew Valley people. Shoot. What's their names? Chucklefish. Is that it?
Yeah.
Basically said, every single game that we publish from now on out, it's coming to Switch. So it is no longer like, we'll see. We'll kind of decide which ones. It's no, everything is coming to the Switch from now on that they make, which is awesome. And
I just want to ask if that includes Pocket Rumble.
Ooh.
Yeah, I went there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Salt and wound.
Yeah.
Understand. Please understand. Yeah.
There you go.
Still waiting on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I don't know, dude. That's harsh. But you're totally right. So,
but I mean, the thing is, it's not for lack of content, right? I don't know about you guys, but when I go every week, like every week I go to the eShop and I'm looking at content, I'm like they're it's almost too much.
Well, and here's the thing.
There was
a week, like not, but a couple of weeks ago, there were seven or eight games that came out on the eShop in one day.
Dude, I hate to tell you, but Octopath Traveler came out a week ago, the demo. There are now 12 games ahead of it in the eShop.
See, that's what it was,
right? Like, and granted, three of those are different versions of NBA 2K18, which is stupid. Like, hey, I bought the one with the gold icon for $200. I don't know what that's about.
There was a line discussion about that earlier this afternoon.
That's so dumb. But it's.
I understand what they're doing with that, but yeah, it is kind of dumb.
It's very It's no kindness about it.
You're just pre-ordering microtransactions.
Yeah. So that's the eShop. I think I'm pretty excited about what's coming. And we are even experiencing that too. Like, you know, as highfalutin media people now, like we're getting bombarded with review codes, right? And we're like, I guess I'm gonna play that one too. Okay, I'll play that one. Okay, who's playing? Who's got some? Who wants to know? Right? Like we're.
I want to bring this in because I almost recorded a video about this past week, but I just couldn't get time to sit down and do it. Like, and here was my question: like, did you think back even like when the Switch was revealed? You know, like last December or November or whenever, did you ever think that we would be sitting around saying we have too many games to play on our Nintendo system?
I'm serious, on
a system whose biggest criticism by people who don't understand how Nintendo games much is it doesn't have enough games.
Like, yeah. I never said this about my Wii U. I have too many games to play.
Yeah,
too many choices, and like. I think that's kind of where we're at. Like right now is like, there's like tiers to it almost to me is like, these are games that I want to play right now. And these are games that I want to play later. And these are games I don't want to play. And How do you do all that? Like,
and then the funny part was, you remember when the Wii U or certain Switch came out and everyone's like, this is the release schedule for 2017. What are they going to do? Looks like we have droughts. Looks like there's big gaps. Right now I'm like, I kind of feel like I'm being waterboarded with games, right? Like I'm drowning from it and we can't get out of it.
Where's the gap? I would like a drought right now so I can catch up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and I was thinking about this too. You know, we talked a lot about, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about what is Nintendo's 2018 lineup going to look like, right? And I think that the thing that we're forgetting is that we've been waiting around for things like Virtual Console and ports for all of the other sorts of things too, right? That they could very easily just drop a ROM in the eShop and everybody would be diving into that again too, right? Like, they still have their entire back catalog that they have not unleashed yet that they could do at any time too, right? So if we're looking into that, looking into the future and thinking, oh, I don't know what's going to happen, like that review schedule looks pretty bare, it's like, yeah, but don't forget, because Eternal Darkness is going to be on there in January or something like that, you know what I mean? Like, that could very easily be something that could happen, or Mario Sunshine or whatever, right? So those are the kinds of things that also could very much be happening. It is crazy how well the first 6 months of the Switch has gone, and I'm really looking forward to what's coming.
And that is exactly the statement. This is only the first 6 months.
Yeah.
Right? Like, now if they can, how, you know, and the question we're always asking is, how can Nintendo maintain this level of stability and momentum? Can they continue it for a life cycle that's 5-6 years? That's the interesting part, but that's a different conversation altogether. What else is in the headlines?
Yeah, so here we've got headlines coming up here, and this is, again, our new sort of format here. I've got some music to go with this. So we're going to do these in quickfire style, and just, you know, spend a couple of minutes on each one, or maybe a little less even. First one, we were supposed to talk about this last week, and we didn't. NES Classic is coming back to stores in summer 2018, and the SNES Classic shipments will continue through 2018. Nintendo has realized that they like money. Unlike Marty. Marty does not like money.
Do you realize that we're 9 days away from the SNES Classic?
Oh, what?
Yeah.
9 days.
Friday. Next Friday.
Wow. Okay. Yeah,
when the whole Toys R Us thing broke the other day, I'm like, I wonder if this is why they didn't do pre-orders, and I wonder how that's going to happen. And someone replied, that's just next week. It'll be business as normal. I'm like, where did the time go?
Weird.
I think this is great. I think Nintendo is listening to the feedback they got that the shortage was people couldn't get the NES Classic. We're going to scalpers. Reggie said last or 2 weeks ago, do not go to scalpers. We've got you covered. Essentially, don't pay more than what the price, the ticket sticker price is. And then they announce it. So good on Nintendo for hearing it. Hopefully, you know, we will see. We'll see when it actually does release, how much the availability is. But you do have to remember also, people, just because you can't get it day one doesn't mean there won't be more shipments. Okay, I was talking to one of the stores here, and they said, yeah, we've got shipment dates. At various, like, you can pre-order one right now, but we can't get it to you until like the November shipment date. And I was like, wait, hold on, that's November. Like, what does anyone matter? Like, the point is, just because you don't get day one doesn't mean that you're not getting it.
And can we say good on retailers for canceling duplicate orders?
Yeah.
Everybody has done that. I mean, Best Buy has done it. Amazon's done it. Walmart's done it. Thank you guys.
Those screenshots going around of someone who bought $8,000 worth of them on Amazon and then, canceled those orders.
Good job, Amazon.
Thank you. That's awesome. That's insane. So the thing is that now they're going to be here all through 2018, which, NES Classic isn't coming back for almost a year from now. So they're going to have to make more, right? Like, they literally were like, oh, I guess we'll make some.
Well, you don't want to flood the market with two of those at the exact same time.
Right.
Right. So you do want to reposition yourself. And then right after the NES Classic, my prediction is that, you know, September, October in 2018, you're going to get another Classics console, right?
Game Boy.
Maybe it's the N64, maybe it's the Game Boy. Yeah, probably the Game Boy, actually.
Just release the cartridges on Switch, please. I don't need this crap in my life. I don't need a million little pieces of card or plastic or whatever. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I don't need it. But anyway,
And maybe, you know, Zach, maybe that's actually a strategy why they're not releasing this until 2018, is that is their virtual console solution.
I don't want that. Okay.
We'll talk more when we're ready.
Yeah. So next up, we've got a Switch Online app updated to allow voice chat when phone is locked or while using other apps. Translated another way, Switch app works the way it should have worked all along.
They flipped the right bit in the compiler and made a new load.
Yeah, that's what she said. I don't know what that means. Yeah,
on the overhead cam, I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
Turn on the warp drive continuum thingy. Yep. Have you guys used this app at all since Splatoon launched?
No. We used it twice, right? Well, that's the thing that's a killer is that There is literally no reason to use this if you're not gonna going into a pre-planned outing into Splatoon with friends. And even then, it's like, yeah, but
and we've got to add more games than just Splatoon, right? Like, that's it so far.
And the killer is too with Splatoon is why can I not use this if I'm in a match with my friends in Turf War, right? Like just in plain old public matches. You know, I understand not wanting to have people talk to having people talking to randoms. Like, I understand the logic behind that. I don't necessarily agree with it, but to have it completely blocked off to only those walled gardens, so to speak, is pretty dumb.
Well, they've listened to us on this. Maybe they'll make some improvements when the paid service launches. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. So that's that. I'm assuming what else is coming that is even going to have this? Like, I guess maybe they could put smartphone app stuff into Mario, or like there's nothing. Like, I can't even think of another game that is coming up. Rocket League, yeah, maybe, but it's.
I don't know. I haven't played Rocket League. This one I was thinking of.
Retrofitting Mario Kart 8, maybe,
or even
and the not yet announced. But we know what's coming eventually, Smash.
Yeah, Smash for sure. I think the question too though is like, is there are there other functionalities that they could put into the app other than the voice chat, right? Like how you can go and buy gear and stuff in the current app. So I don't know. We'll see. But anyways, so that's the Switch Online app. Next one up here is the Minecraft Better Together update. Will be available for Switch this winter, even though Xbox, mobile, VR, and Windows 10 versions launch today. So there you go. That's weird. I don't know what the holdup was for that and why it.
I actually read an article that said that since the Switch is so new, that there's some things that need to be worked out to make sure that it works well. Okay. And they just want to be sure that they release the best product first.
Okay.
Which I can appreciate.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's better than launching and having it be crappy, right? Like, leave or not work at all. Yeah, like leave the current version.
Halo Championship Edition or whatever it was that came out.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, they want to make sure that it works, and they don't want to break it by giving it to people early, too. So,
my son's really bummed about this. He's got it on computer, and he's got it on Switch, and he wanted to be able to like play with his friend doesn't have a Switch, but he's got it on computer.
Right.
And he's like, oh, we'll be able to play together finally. Because it's like finding a match on or finding him on the computer. And I'm not sure that I even really know how to do it. It's like, you gotta go find his server and blah, blah. I don't care. Like, I don't care about Minecraft enough to really get into that, but now I'm hoping with the Switch you'll be able to find him a little bit easier.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about this is that like if this is really bringing all of Minecraft together, that means that like modding and everything else is eventually going to come to home consoles as well,
which is super cool. I'm really looking forward to that. Does that mean that we'll be able to import like custom skins and stuff? Like, is that part of that, or is that different?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. If it's the same features as everything else, then sure.
If it's
sure.
the same as PC, then that's slick, man. Well, I think I even saw
that. Well, the crazy thing about it is they said that once it gets on the Switch, that the Switch will be able to use the Halo combat pack, like the mashup pack on the Switch.
That's exciting. I'm looking forward to it, man. I think it's going to be good. So, very cool. It's just going to be a little bit longer. They did say winter, though. They didn't say, like, 2018, right? So
they said winter, which can also mean 2018.
Yeah, that's true.
Since winter is technically, like, December, January, February, right?
Oh, shoot. You're right. Okay. So yeah,
and in the most of March, still.
Yeah.
Oh, shut up, Jesse.
So next up on our headlines here, Picross S is coming to the Switch next week. Justin, moving on,
nobody cares.
That's super exciting. Actually, you know what? Just I was saying before the show, my wife actually, we were talking about like all the different games that had come out and like how we'd been kind of bombarded by review copies and all those sorts of things. My wife was like, when is a Picross game coming to the Switch? Like, that's all I really care about. Like, that's those are the kind of games that she loves, and she just sinks her teeth into those. So that's coming next week. And those are by the
as soon as I saw the article for this today, I sent it to my wife via text message, and she was like, well, one more person competing for the Switch at home.
Yep, exactly. So that'll be fun. I'm excited.
So this is the same developer as what was the Picross games on 3DS, Jupiter. But it is getting a price bump. I think the Jupiter games were all $5, or the E games were all $5 each. Picross S will be $8.
Okay, which is, you know, that's not too bad.
It sounds like they're adding more content than a normal E game as well.
300 puzzles.
Yeah. So I'm confident that the $8 will be worth the money.
Is it going to be like? Here's a question though: I'm assuming they're going to do touchscreen controls. Because using a controller probably won't be nearly as fun.
They are, but I'm going to guess the controller too, because they've mentioned two-player mode as well, where you can work on puzzles together.
Ah, that's cool. All right. Although, like, so okay, so you could use the control stick, I guess. Yeah, sure.
Have you ever played like Mario's Picross on the Game Boy?
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be like that.
I'm assuming it's going to be like that.
Right. Okay. Yeah,
that's a rough one, especially if you're used to the Jupiter games.
Yeah,
but it's still definitely playable.
Yep. Right on. Final headline here: Square Enix is trying to get the full version of Final Fantasy 15 running on the Switch. Didn't they announce that the mobile version is coming already, or was that just speculation?
No, they just said at the time. You know, the same day that they announced the mobile edition is going to be coming out, they said, we want to get Final Fantasy 15 running on the Switch. And everyone, including myself, assumed, oh, the Switch is probably getting the mobile version.
But just that's not the case.
Low-poly models would make it easier. Mm-hmm.
They said that they had gotten it running, but it wasn't running well. But that was with no optimization.
Oh, well, that's...
Now they're saying that... They're working to optimize it. So I think that there's been a shift here in and I'm going to be, I don't know, this is speculation, but I think it's Project Octopath Traveler was so well received by people once the demo came out. I think Square went,
Yeah. Yeah, that's we're the past couple of weeks, I think a lot of companies are finally being like, oh, okay. I guess, yeah, we should actually get on this. Like, we need to. It is
well,
becoming a platform.
You'll notice that you can't really find any articles anymore that are the Switch is going to die, Nintendo's doomed, Nintendo sucks, blah, blah, blah. It's all like Nintendo's having their best year ever. Nintendo's doing this. The stock's up. This, and this. Yeah. You can't lose
except
on the Switch.
Except for Capcom. We'll wait and see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they're like the big fat kid who just like sits in the corner of the playgrounds like, oh, if nobody wants to pick me first, then I don't want to play at all.
That's exactly what it is. All right. So, everybody, I'm going to fade this music out here. We'll give it one last. I've been listening. I don't know if you guys have heard this music, but it's been playing the whole time. 12 minutes. All right. So let's get into what we've been playing, shall we?
Do it.
All right. So, you guys, this week has, or the past couple of weeks, really, even last week, we didn't really get to cover all the games that we've been playing. We have so many games to talk about that it is absolutely bonkers. So, I think there is one game. I had something up here not too long ago. Anyway, it's, of course, the big game that everybody's talking about this week. Where's a good song here that I could play? Maybe. Whoa, dude, that's pretty good. It's not nearly as recognizable as I'd hoped, but how about this one? How about this one?
Metroid is in captivity.
What? There you go. That's what you got. So basically, oh, here we go. This is a good one. Yeah, that's the one. By the way, some of this music in this game, I think this game, Metroid, of course, we're talking about Metroid Samus Returns for the 3DS. I don't think I realized the history that either that Metroid 2 had and the impact that it had on later games. Either that, or they have brought some of those elements into Samus Returns. Like this song, for example, straight up, like I was playing Metroid Prime before this game came out, like a couple days before, and this is the, like, almost exactly the music that is played in the lab.
It was definitely brought in.
You think that, yeah?
Oh, yeah, this was not a,
this was not.
In fact, is this not the same music that started appearing in, like, the fire regions during Super Metroid? I think it was.
Okay. For sure it's in Metroid Prime. I do not have as much history with Super Metroid as a lot of people do. But it's always been one of my favorite tracks in Metroid Prime. It's super.
It kind of got on my nerves in Samus Returns.
Really?
In places. Not everywhere.
It's a little bit weird. It is a little bit weird that it's the music in this game is kind of more by sort of the area, the type of area that you're in, and not necessarily, you know, like in Metroid or Super Metroid, it's like, oh, this is Brinstar, and this is, you know, they've got their very distinct themes. This is Norfair, and this is all of those, all that stuff. But
right,
this is like, here's Area 3, and here's Area 4, and here's Area 2, and it's like, what? Like, okay, we're just going deeper into the planet, I guess. But it's awesome. So.
Speaking of awesome, can we just yes. appreciate for a minute how amazingly good this game is?
Oh my gosh, dude! I posted this today.
About
an hour ago, I posted on Twitter a screen or a picture of my 3DS like activity log. It is already for 2017. You know, it'll show like the top game. It's already the top game of the year. Like most played, which granted, there's not a whole lot else, you know. Like I didn't get as much into Fire Emblem, Shadows of Valentia as I thought I was going to, but yeah, I'm like 15 hours into this game now. It's crazy. How many Metroids do you guys have left? I guess let's go with that just to see where everybody is.
I have zero.
You beat it. Okay, so you have.
I beat it.
Okay, Jesse, what about you?
35.
Wow. Okay, so you have 35 left?
Yeah.
Okay.
This game isn't clicking with me for some reason. Sorry. The way this game's organized, it's you know, definitely based, part of it is because it's based on a Game Boy game, but it's so very tight. They have so many mini puzzles within short proximity of each other. That if you get stuck, you seem to get stuck hard.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I ended up getting stuck in Area 3 after the first Metroid in that area. And I'm like, all right, I need a break. I want to go back to Area 1. Can I, now that I know more about how the spider ball works and have extra toys to play with, it's to try to get some things that I missed. And I am now stuck in Area 1 again. I don't remember how I got out the first time.
Yeah.
So I'm like, ugh.
Here's the thing. One thing I will say as far as a negative for this game, and I know, like you said, Marty, like it's really, really good. One negative that I feel about this game is that in previous Metroids, the levels were kind of designed in such a way where there were like it was designed like a spaceship, right? Like you would imagine a spaceship would be designed where it was kind of logical, where it was like, there would be long pillars of hallway. You know, it's what you would imagine basically is like a vertical hallway.
You're thinking like the map from Fusion.
Exactly, where it's straight up and down, and then there's little areas on the left and right side, both ways, and you know we kind of go that way. What this one? It's like they're different puzzle pieces that aren't all actually very well. Like it's hard to get from one area to another, and you kind of have to stare at the map long enough and think, okay, well, on the map, it looks like where I want to go is right next to where I am. But if I actually follow the pathway that I need to take to get there, it's faster to teleport all the way across the map and then take this little short little thing back over to where I am. Like it's really kind of confusing.
It's more in the vein of the original Metroid.
Right. Yeah. And it's just, it's very,
even Samus, even, I'm sorry, even Super Metroid cleaned that up some and made it a little more intuitive about where you went in and out of an area.
Yeah. It's,
and you know, but this game, I mean, it does boast the most expansive map area of any Metroid game, any 2D Metroid that has come out so far.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what people have to understand with this too is that they have done some significant cleanup on this game as well, kind of like they did with Ocarina of Time, you know, the 3DS version, the kind of the remastering, I guess. They've streamlined certain sections of this game as well, because I remember playing this game on Game Boy back when it first came out, and it is just brutal. Mm-hmm. I don't know
how you do this without a map.
I'm just going to say this, and I know there's somebody who's going to probably get upset about it or whatever, but it's not good. It was a terrible game on the Game Boy. I mean, was it advanced for its time? Yes. Can we credit a lot of Metroid conventions to it? Absolutely. It did great things for the series, but if you go back and you look at it, it just was not a good game. Mm-hmm. Because it was so easy to get lost and have no idea where you were.
Yeah.
And this game makes it a lot easier, especially, okay, the Aeon powers are brilliant. Yep. And honestly, if they hadn't been in the game, especially the radar one, I wouldn't have finished it as fast as I did.
Oh, there's no way. Yeah, I use that. I know that some people are like, oh, don't use it the first time you play it. And I'm like, oh, screw that, dude. Time for that.
I talked to a guy last Friday, like after I'd been playing it for a while, and he's like, I was like, there's even this new power where you can kind of do a radar and see. And he's like, no, it's not how you play Metroid. You're supposed to have to bomb everywhere. And I was like, nobody got time for that.
There is no way that I am willing to spend the time required to do that. That sounds like craziness. And if that's the way you want to play it, that's fine. But
yeah, yeah.
So
let's say that that's totally fine.
I am currently, how many do I have? I have 4 Metroids left. Without too much spoilers, I am fighting
large Metroids.
I just saw a really, really big new Metroid that I'd never seen before. And now I'm fighting, it's a non-Metroid boss. I'll just say that.
That was a fun fight.
It is a very difficult fight.
It really is. And you know what? Here's one thing about this game is it is difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is super difficult. I mean, I won't say super difficult, but there are challenges there. It's enough to hook you, but yep, not make you want to quit. Although there are a couple times at the end game, and I'll say the end game, meaning like 4 Metroids or less, mm-hmm, where I just had to set it down and walk away for a little bit.
Yeah.
I need 15 minutes because right now I'm going to say not really nice things about this game if I have to continue to play.
Yeah. My son started playing it, and almost immediately he was starting to get frustrated. Like it was almost immediately very difficult for him. And I can't remember what he was trying to do. Oh, he was having a hard time getting the melee counter down. Mm-hmm. And again, he's almost 7. And so I was like, you know what, buddy? Like, and then he started, you know, the first Metroid boss comes in and he's like, Dad, can you help me beat this boss? I'm like, no. Actually, because if I do that now for you, then you will not be able to play this game at all, because you have to fight like 40 of these bosses and it's really, really hard. So you're going to have to learn how to do it. And he was like, oh, come on. I'm like, no, you got to figure it out. Get good, man. And then just kind of walked away.
I guess the only thing that I like, and I won't say as a complaint or a gripe, but a question that I have after playing through this is, and again, I can show you this, my playthrough time here. 9 hours and 37 minutes, and I'm just shy under 50% complete, 49.3%, which I thought I was actually higher than that. My question going forward is, how do we do Metroid now without a melee counter?
Mm.
You get what I'm saying? Because They didn't just add it into this game and say, oh, cool, she can do a melee counter now. They made it integral to this game.
Yeah.
Like, you have to do that melee counter sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I think you could, it definitely makes the, like, it's much more reactive, I guess, right? Like, I think that many of the other games, like Zero Mission and Fusion, they're very run and gun, right? Like, it's, and Super Metroid 2, where you just run as fast as you can through those levels. And it's, and I just unlocked the, what is it? The screw attack? Is that what that's called? Where you're jumping and it actually damages guys?
Yes.
And suddenly I was like, wow, I'm just destroying everybody. This is amazing. But before that, I was like, okay, that's like it is very much like you've got to counter just about everybody.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised at how, and I guess, I mean, this game's been out a week now. I can talk about like the first couple hours, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So I was really surprised at like how quickly you picked up items at the very first of the game. Mm. You know, like at first it's just like, oh yeah, I've got this beam and I've got, now I've got the morph ball. Oh, now I've got the spider ball. Oh, now I've got the power beam, the charge beam and the ice beam.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, it was
in previous Metroids. It's felt like that's the stuff you needed to move on to the next level. Right. Like you earned it. And so now you're able to, and there's still elements of that, but it did feel like you're all of a sudden like overloading very quickly.
How many missiles you started with. You normally start with like zero or five.
They're a lot more necessary though when you're fighting the Metroids though, right? Like missiles are a much more important part of this game.
You've got to have them. You've got to have a lot of them to damage the Metroids.
You've got to have a lot of them. I've got 156 currently. Like,
I think I ended with like 193 or 196.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, it's definitely the count is definitely up there.
Yeah. I'm still in the 50s, but already in that small area I went, you know, I found almost 10 upgrades.
Yeah.
You start with 30 and each upgrade gives you 3 more.
So Justin, what about you, man? Yeah. Where are you at in this game?
Yeah. So I have 30 Metroids more to collect. I'm in the third area right now. I think I got about 6 hours into it this weekend, just kind of playing it in between stuff. I really, really enjoy it. And it is such a harken back to Super Metroid, that I absolutely love it. It's the girls as playing, they're like, oh, what game are you playing? And they're just like curled up and just watched. And it was so funny. I was in I think it was one of the attacks against the Metroids. And they're like, daddy, you have to do this. Dad, you have to hit them. You have to. And I was like, you need to stop micromanaging me. All right. You need to back up. All right. I got this. You need to simmer. All right, child. But yeah, they were really infatuated with it. And then I remember like one of the times I died and the suit explodes and Morgan's like, oh, she's a girl. And I was like, yep. And you can just kind of hear his like penny drop. And I was
That's
like,
awesome.
Very cool moment. Awesome. Yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it. And I want them to give us the next game in Metroid like this. Like, I know they're doing Metroid Prime 4, which is great.
We need,
but I want another, I need another, like, what's the next step to this in the Metroid series?
I need the follow up to Fusion.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, like, yeah. And so, yeah, it's so good. That melee attack, I think, is fantastic. It takes a little bit getting used to it to understand it, how it works and the timing of it, right? And the tells, but just the animations associated with it. You know, the thing I really love is it does, you know, Metroid is all about that isolation, that loneliness factor, and it bangs on that just perfectly, right? Like it replicates everything that you want Metroid to be and more. So I'm absolutely, absolutely loving this game.
I feel like, you know, one of the things that's interesting to me about this game too is the amiibo support. So did anybody who here got the amiibo?
I did.
Okay. So
I hear mine are in the mail.
Yes.
I have the amiibo, but have never tried them.
So I feel like, they don't break the game. Cause I don't think that's the right way to say it, but they definitely, what they do is they give you reserve packs for different things. Now I've never wanted a Zero Suit Samus amiibo before, but when I found out what they do in this game, I was like, oh yeah, no, that would be really helpful. I would love to have that. So I'm trying to remember exactly what they are. Marty, I don't know if you recall. Do you have all the Samus Amiibo?
I do. And the two that just came out, if you tap the new Samus Amiibo, it unlocks an Aeon Reserve Tank. So I've already kind of talked about this. The Aeon powers that you get are new to the series. There's four of these which are mapped to the directional pad. And you have a meter for those as well, so you can't just infinitely use them. And so that Aeon Reserve Tank adds an actual little special icon to your heads-up display. And when you run out of Aeon, the game will pause, and that tank will break open, and you'll get back a little bit of that energy, as if, you know, just to say, hey, keep going, or whatever. The Metroid Amiibo, though, is extremely helpful. And what it does is it shows you where the nearest Metroid is on the map.
Mm. Yeah. And it's different.
I did have to use that once.
And it's different than the one that shows up when you go to the shrine or whatever, right? Because that'll kind of show you where a Metroid husk is, but not where where the Metroid actually resides.
No, it did.
And the
it
amiibo, showed me actually no, where yes. it was. Sorry. So when you go to the shrine, it shows where the husk is. If you use the amiibo, it goes to where actually the Metroid actually is, right?
So, right.
That would be the difference. So it will show those two ways of looking for them are actually will show two different locations.
Right. The other two amiibo that are already out is the Samus amiibo. Which will unlock the Smash Brothers amiibo will unlock a missile tank, and the Zero Suit Samus amiibo will unlock the energy. Trying to look this up right.
It's an energy.
Another energy tank, and after completing the game, all the amiibo do something else as well.
Yeah.
So Smash Samus unlocks a concept art gallery. Zero Suit Samus unlocks background music soundtrack. The Metroid will unlock a new difficulty mode, fusion mode, which allows Samus to have her fusion suit.
Sweet.
And after completing the game, you'll also be able to unlock the Metroid 2 art gallery with the new Samus amiibo. And guys, like, I know I keep saying this about amiibo, but Nintendo continues to outdo themselves with their amiibo lately, and these two are really cool. Although, and Zach, you can talk about this a little bit.
Yeah,
the squishiness of the squishy Metroid is not all it's cracked up to be.
Kind of disappointing, yeah. Because when they said that they were doing a squishy amiibo, I assumed that it was made out of gel, right? And so it was like a solid being like all the way through gel, sort of mold. Which is not at all what it is. It's like this little plastic shell around the little solid plastic thing. So I feel like my daughter, who is 4 and enthusiastic, I was like, if you're gonna squeeze it, be gentle, because it's got those little red balls inside with the little tendrils or whatever, you know, that kind of come, the little veins that come out of the little balls. And I was like, she is going to squeeze that thing so hard that one of those little plastic things is going to snap off inside. That's what I was concerned about. And so, like,
you know, it kind of, I thought you, when you were talking about your children, I was thought you were going to say that it kind of feels like a pacifier. It kind of feels like a teething ring, like something they would chew on.
Yeah. Oh, dude, don't even, because that's exactly what would happen. I didn't even think about that till you said that. But it's the only thing is that it's probably too big around to fit in their mouth. So that's the saving grace with that.
Uh oh.
Am I losing you? Hang on. Pause. I'm gonna pause. And we're back. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, you totally froze like as soon as you said, "Oh, dude, I haven't even thought about that."
Okay, we're good.
About the teething thing.
No, we're back. Sorry, I paused it when it was doing weird stuff. So, okay. So I don't know anything else about Metroid, guys. I feel like we're going to be talking more about this. But it's good, man. I am loving this game.
Yeah. No, I think move on to what else. What else we got?
Well, the one thing that I didn't like about the Metroid amiibo was it seems kind of a little bit of wobbly. Like, there's a little bit of give like around the canister. And my daughter go, oh, does this thing move? I'm like, no, it doesn't move. Leave it alone.
Don't. No, it should not be moving. Yeah, it's definitely not. It looks great. Like, if you put it on the shelf, it looks awesome. But considering that these are made to be scanned multiple times, it's definitely a little more, you know, you got to be careful with the Metroid one in particular. So, yeah, that is that's Metroid, man. I think that's about all we're going to say about it this week. Next up, we have another game that we're going to talk about here. And this is something that I, you know, being Nintendo dads, we sometimes get access to Nintendo games that are not out yet. And this is one of those times. We published a review of Pokken Tournament DX on our YouTube channel. You can go and watch my review. I am actually going to stream some probably tomorrow, I guess. I hadn't really thought about that. It's the game comes out the day after that, so I probably should. Sorry guys, it's been kind of crazy. So Pokken Tournament DX is coming out this Friday, and I really like it. I think it's a really great version of this game. If you like Pokken Tournament, I think it's definitely the best version of this game. And I don't know if you guys have any specific questions about it, or if you guys like saw the review and had any sort of thoughts of things like that. But I can talk about it a little bit too. So I don't know. Any questions before I kind of dive into it? No? Okay. Is anybody here interested in this? Marty, I know you said, or is he?
I guess the only question I would have is, like, how does it compare to the Wii U version?
Maybe that's, you know what, Zach seems to be trying to get his poop together, but let's continue with the show maybe here and talk about that. So Octopath Traveler, Marty, you've been playing that.
I have.
What are your thoughts on that?
Oh my God. Like, I had gotten to a place in my life where I just did not care for RPGs, and this really did it for me for some reason. Maybe it was it looked so much like Final Fantasy III,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know. I think it may have been that, or just the easiness, the ease at which I was able to pick up combat and everything. I really don't know. Like, there was just something about it that grabbed me. And like my big question, I guess, coming out of that demo is, the first two were really fun to play. You know, there were different mechanics for both of them. But can they consistently do that for five more characters without it seeming like it's just a rehash? You know, like, you know, Primrose can do this allure ability and have people follow her or fight with her. Right. Like, is that going to be a duplicate of somebody else? Like, is there going to be a magician who can conjure people, you know, and lead them around, and you end up going, oh yeah, this is the same thing that Primrose can do. It's just set in a different part of the world.
Hello. Okay, I'm back.
Cool.
What am I?
Zach, we're just talking a little bit about Octopath.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel about it?
I really liked it. I only played the Warrior. I didn't play Primrose at all. But I, other than just whatever you can play after, you know, beating the boss as the Warrior, but I really liked it. I'm really looking forward to it. It's got some good, I think we talked about it a little bit when we went over the Nintendo Direct last week, but it's got some real good, it's a good blend between like that Final Fantasy VI sort of, you know, sort of art style mixed with great art or great sort of visual upgrades to that. But also mixing that with some good adult mature themes. The mix of those two is really awesome. I'm really looking forward to it.
There's definitely, I will say from the demo, there's some graphical little quirks that they need to fix up, you know, before like it comes out, and I'm sure they have plenty of time before then. But, like both in Ulbrich and Primrose's campaign, when you go into a dark area, and there's that really cool effect, you know, where like you can only see around the torches and everything, and they're carrying a torch, which is really neat. But like they're like, it's like their body bursts into flames. And I was like, that just like, I see what they're trying to do there, but it just doesn't work. Like, maybe it's just on my screen too.
It's not
too bright.
Yeah.
I didn't like it in the dungeony areas, the fixed camera. I so wanted to rotate that camera around just so I can get different angles on things. Because mm-hmm. you know, they hide things behind things that you can't see.
Well, and at the very least have something like in, is it, I'm trying to think what kind of games or what game, like, you know, where you could kind of, I'm even thinking of like Warcraft 3, where you could use the mouse wheel in that game to kind of scroll down and up, right? And just kind of like almost like,
yeah,
it's like cameras on like a boom or arm or something, and just kind of like bring it down to a ground level and then bring it back up, or kind of rotate it like 10 degrees on each side of the character or something. That would be really, really cool. I don't know if they could do that, but if they can, that'd be awesome.
You need, Zach, you owe it to yourself to go back and play that part of the campaign, the Primrose campaign.
Is it really good?
It's different. I mean, there is a really big difference there.
Yeah,
I played Primrose, but not Ulrich, and kind of the way the battle mechanic is set up, you really don't have to learn it until you get to the boss fight.
Mm-hmm.
It took me 5 times before I finally beat that boss. When I finally understood, I had to then pretty much master the boss fight in one fight because I didn't need to do it with the previous fights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm sold. Like I'll be getting this one day one. I'm very much looking forward to it. So
I could not have said that after like the initial reveal.
Oh yeah.
And even after the direct, but the demo totally sold it on me. And I think that's a great case for how some of these games that are coming off, you know, like, or coming out, like they need demos. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Rabbids could have definitely, I think, used a demo, even though it's been almost universally praised. You've got people who are on the fence who are kind of like, I don't know. Well, maybe you would win them over with it. You know, even if it's a 15-minute demo, take them through 1-1 and 1-2, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, I think Fire Emblem Warriors would be a great one for a demo as well, because, like, that's one where you've got a case where it's releasing stupidly close to Odyssey. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to, but like, maybe a demo would make me throw money at it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I didn't like it. Not my cup of tea. Let's move on to more games.
All right. Well. So let's go back to Pokken Tournament. I before my internet crapped out. By the way, Jesse, I'm just going to get the audio from the second half of the show from you. So just so that we're good there, because my recording's being weird. So all right, for real this time, I'm going to talk about Pokken. So Pokken Tournament is a really good version of this game. Can you hear me okay? Can you still hear me?
Oh, yeah.
You're still good.
Oh, hallelujah. Okay, so the main edition here, third time's a charm. Main edition is the new characters. So there's 5 new fighters in this game. You've got the 4 from the Japanese arcade game, which are Scizor, Darkrai, Croagunk, which is a super weird addition, but he's kind of like a troll character. He's pretty funny. And who was it? Oh, Empoleon, who is the penguin in the demo. And then, of course, the character exclusive to this game, which is actually the character I've spent the most time playing, is Decidueye, who is the grass starter from Sun and Moon. And he is super awesome. They've also added a new stage, a new pair of support Pokemon. And overall, I really, really like it. Marty, you said you had a question about it too. What were you?
Yeah, like I was gonna ask how, like, as someone who owns the Wii U version, besides the portability and the extra 5 characters stage and the fact that you can play Mewtwo in the beginning, what's the big deal? Like, why should I go out and buy this game again?
So I think that honestly, the big thing here, they've added a as far as other things. The local multiplayer is, like, if you're not playing this either local multiplayer or online, if that's not your thing, then I don't think that, like, you know right away if this is for you or not. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like they've added new modes and stuff like that. Like they've added this team battle, which is basically like if you've played the Pokemon games, there's like a 3-on-3 match that you can do in those games where or you basically go in with like a team of 3 Pokemon. Right. And so you and your partner kind of, you know, each choose a team of 3 and you send one out. And then if you defeat theirs, then they choose a new one. And if they you right. And so the first person to eliminate the other guy's team wins. And it's kind of a cool cool idea. It's kind of fun, right? Like it's kind of in the theme of Pokemon, and it's cool that way. It's not game changing by any means, but it's a new format that's interesting. They have daily challenges, which just kind of so like for example, I haven't done one today, and it's saying that it's a team battle, and you it chooses your 3 Pokemon, so you have. You know, Chandelure, Croagunk, and Weavile are the team, and you have to win a team battle, and they choose your support set. And so you go in there, and you basically just play with whatever characters they've pre-selected. And every day is something different, which is kind of cool. You know, it kind of adds something that for you to do every day, and then it gives you more skill points than you would normally get from a match like that. If you win, so that's cool. Honestly, like the thing in the trailer, the initial reveal trailer for this, you know, there was that Pokemon Direct that they announced Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, and then this game. The initial reveal trailer had like people sitting around using the Joy-Cons around, you know, in tabletop mode. And honestly, for me, that was actually when I sat down with my son. And we, you know, broke off the Joy-Cons and started playing this game in tabletop mode. That is when this game was like, oh, I get it now. Like, I don't know if I necessarily would play this. Like, for me, I don't know if I'd necessarily play, you know, all the time. But I got it almost immediately. Like, it felt really good to play that way. The controls are perfectly, like, they perfectly line up. With a Joy-Con, right? You've got 4 buttons and the shoulder buttons, 4 face buttons and the shoulder buttons and the control stick. And that works really, really well. Like, I really like that. Obviously, it's not ideal. You don't have a D-pad. And when I'm playing, I actually prefer to play with even, like, the D-pad face buttons when I'm playing in something like handheld mode. But I really enjoy it. It's fun. But I also think you know if this game is for you or not. Right. Like if you're not super excited about Pokken Tournament, then I would say that this version of the game doesn't do anything that will change your mind either way. So, yeah. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. I don't know if that answers your question or.
Yeah. So like I've got a son who really likes Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really mind either way. It doesn't really, but like, is there going to be enough here? Cause he's going to ask me to play and he's going to ask me to play a lot. Mm-hmm. Is there enough here to keep him occupied? Is if he's played, you
Does
know,
he have a lot to of, ask Marty to play with him or is he going to be okay by himself?
Well, no, like I'm guessing like, I guess what I'm trying to say is he's played a bit of Pokken Tournament. Is there enough here that's going to keep him interested? Or so, are we better off just keeping the game we've got?
Well, basically, the only thing that's new here, like, has he, like, he could play through the single player campaign again, right? The Ferrum League, right? There's that. There's the daily challenges, and there's online battles, right? And then other than that, it's all multiplayer stuff. So it would be like local battles. There is a wireless battle, but you said you only have one Switch, right? So, but you'd have to have 2 copies of the game in order to do that. It's basically like a local wireless play, but, yeah, honestly, you know what, here's the other thing too, Marty, is that this game, unlike the previous version of the game, for me, this was a positive because I don't have a lot of time to play through the game and I would rather just have all the characters and supports and, levels and all that stuff unlocked right off the get go. But all of them are unlocked immediately in this game, whereas you had to play through the game to unlock them in the previous one. So in that sense, it might actually, the single player might actually hold less purpose than it did in the old version. But I like it that way. It's just that that's, you know, that I think that that's something to keep in mind too. So honestly, unless, you know, it depends on how much these new characters hold any sort of draw for you. Like they are all really fun to play as, and they're all different enough from the existing characters. Like none of them are just, you know, like Pikachu Libre and Pikachu. Like none of them are like that. But they're, you know, I mean, a larger roster, is that a good enough reason for you to pick up the game? I think that's up to you. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I'm probably going to pick it up, but it's not going to be right now. It's probably going to be a Christmas game.
Yeah.
For my son.
Yeah.
You know, he's asked for it, but it's not one that I go, okay, we've got to get this right now.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to have it today. I mean, I've got the old Pokken tournament to trade in, and I've got a couple of Wii U games that may get us close, but
yeah,
I'm not going to go out and rush to get it. In other words.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally can see that. And that's I think that's a fair way of saying that. And I think that this is honestly like this feels like a game that's, you know, it's another one of the ports that is filling out their calendar, and that's fine. Like it is what it is, but there's definitely a big fan base there as well. So I don't know, we'll see. If anybody out there wants to play some online with me, hit us up on Twitter and we can set some up. We'll figure it out. I'm probably going to be streaming some of the new characters and stuff like that and new modes. I am allowed to stream for half an hour before the game releases, and then I'll probably stream a little bit more. So look on Twitter for that, and we'll do that. So yeah, that is that's that. We also have, you guys, we have a ton of like indie games and stuff that we gotta.
We're gonna do some rapid fire, less than 2 minute statements about all of them.
Yes. Yeah. We're.
Let's do that, shall we?
Let's do it. I'm gonna.
Can we also do that with should you get it or should you not get it?
Just do a thumbs up, thumbs down. I like it.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So with that, who's going first? Who's on first?
I'll go first.
Go ahead, Justin.
Sure. So I'm playing 36 Fragments of Midnight. So this is by Petite Games on your eShop right now for $2.99. This is a really cute game. I would definitely recommend thumbs up getting it. You are basically have to collect 36 star fragments across a level. You have one life. If you die, you start again. You have to recollect every single one of them, which is can be very challenging at times. It's the art style is pretty cool. It's like a dark aesthetic, kind of cloudy. The music's very thematic. What is it when you die and a level changes every single time? Is that roguelike?
Roguelike.
Okay, so this has roguelike elements in that every time you die, it does that. So it's really cool. I definitely recommend picking it up. So that's 36 Fragments of Midnight on the eShop currently now for $2.99. It is a thumbs up. Do it. Let's go over to Jesse. Jesse, why don't you talk about Quest of Dungeons first? Can you do that one first?
Speaking of roguelike, that's kind of what this game is. Though I didn't get all that lot far into it to know if the levels are randomly generated every time or if they are static maps. The first room seems to look the same every time, so it might be a static map. I'm not a fan of roguelikes, so that's why I didn't get a lot of time into this. But you know, it's probably one of those games that if you do like roguelikes, you'd probably like it. Game's kind of got a almost like an NES 8-bit graphics feel, like from the original Final Fantasy or a Dragon Quest game. It starts off. The story is actually kind of funny. It says, "Hey, you pick between one of four classes." And then you get the story of, you know, the four of you are camping together and just preparing to go into this castle. And they all decide, oh, we should divide and conquer. You go by yourself. And they're like, what? Sure. So everyone else says, oh, that's a great idea. So whatever class you pick is the one that goes in by itself. And that's what you play with. And then you're able to change it up. I think, you know, every time you die, you're able to pick a different class and try again. And like the warrior is primarily melee, and the the fighting style is, I don't know if you've ever played like the original Ys, but it's you there's no attack A to attack. It's you just run up against them. Okay. But like the spellcasters and the archer do have an A to attack for to activate the ranged attacks. So in I'm trying to remember as much about this as I can. But
so I would say this based on your experience so far, Jesse, thumbs up or thumbs down or thumbs like not quite sure yet.
Not quite sure yet to probably a thumbs okay. down for me just because you know, I don't like this type of game. But again, if you like roguelikes, then I'd say, you know, give it a shot. I don't remember how much this costs. This might be like a $5 game.
Okay. Cool. No, it's more than five. I think it's almost 11. I was in the eShop a couple moments ago.
Is it? Oh.
Yeah, I'll verify that in a second. Okay, cool. Marty, let's head over to you. Semi-Spheres, Marty. Semi-Spheres.
Yeah, I've been playing Semi-Spheres from Vivid Helix. It is a puzzle game that is, I think, it's quite a bit different. It's got a pretty unique idea. You control jellyfish on both sides of the screen or jellyfish-like creatures. One of them is blue and the other is orange, and the blue one can actually pop up on the other side and vice versa to distract enemies and different things like that. And the goal is to get both of them to come together at one central point on the map. And so you can literally play this game with the Joy-Con separated and, you know, just one in each hand controlling the different ones, which actually takes quite a bit of getting used to. I didn't think it would, but you can also play this two-player, which is pretty neat. And it's not like overly stressful, and it's not kind of overwhelming. I think I'm about 20 levels into it out of 50, and you know, so far it's gotten increasingly challenging, but nothing that just makes you want to throw your Joy-Con across the room or whatever. But it's built as a meditative parallel puzzle game. And so I definitely get that sense of zen from it, you know, kind of like just this is a game you can play and kind of just be calm. There's a lot of stealth inspired gameplay. There's parts of it where like there's a hole in the map and like the blue one has to pop up over in the orange and has to make a noise to cause something to turn around and look at it so the orange one can get by it and then use an item to cut a hole so that it can appear on the blue side and do the same. So the blue can get where it's going. So there, I mean, there's like, it's a lot of thinking about placements and different things like that. I would totally recommend it. Like, especially if you like puzzle games or if you're just like, if you have gamers in your house that aren't into like blasting and shooting and, you know, it's probably a cool game that like we could probably sit down and play with our kids or play with our wives, you know, maybe if they don't are not really into games. This could be like one of those hook games. You know, that cool. We get people in. So thumbs up.
Thumbs up. And $9.99 on your eShop currently. Yes. Marty, the other one you're playing is Robonauts. You just got a code for this one. And this is currently in the eShop right now as well for $13.49, which is a reduced special price. What can you tell us about Robonauts?
Robonauts is the closest thing you're going to get to a classic arcade game right now on the Switch. Basic story is this tiny little janitorial robot or whatever gets sucked out into space, lands on an alien planet, finds a power suit, and kind of starts on the journey to becoming the hero he's always wanted to be or he's always idolized. So you've kind of got this like 2D Mario Galaxy thing going on where you're on a planet and you can go around the surface of the planet, and then you can press a button that will cause you to flip onto another planet that's either above you or below you. And so you do this to traverse through the levels and you get to places like I'm a few levels in, and like in one of the levels, the planet's actually the boss and it has all these like tendrils that come out of it and start attacking you. And so you get different weapons. You have a blaster right now. And I have a bomb right now, and those can be temporarily powered up to do more damage or cause more havoc on the screen. And it's fast, but it's the visuals are well done. The music is well done. Sound effects are on point. If you're looking for that like quick arcadey blast 'em up 2D type thing, then this is your game. But here's the thing, Justin, I can't right now sit here and give it like a thumbs up or thumbs down because sure. I haven't played it enough. Now I will change my review on next week's show. But okay. For now, I'm going to give it a middle of the road, leaning toward a thumbs up because I like these type of games. But okay. I'm gonna kind of keep it level until I spend some more time with it.
Do it. Okay.
Right on.
I love it. Thank you. Zach, Thimbleweed Park.
Yeah, so Thimbleweed Park is made by the people. So I was just looking at the eShop listing, actually. So it is the company is Terrible Toy Box, but apparently some of the writers were involved in Monkey Island and there was another one. I'm pulling it back up here because I should have it with me. But basically, it is a point-and-click adventure game. And it is currently going on the eShop for $20. If you have a mobile device, like something on iOS, for example, it is half that price. So keep that in mind. And honestly, I feel like it comes down to, you know, what is your preference on playing these kinds of games. But it is a point and click adventure game. And so having said that, let me just pull up the listing here. So that is that Ron Gilbert and Gary Winnick. Do those names mean anything to you, Jesse? Creators of Monkey Island and Maniac Mansion.
Okay. I don't know the creators, but I've heard of those games.
Yeah, so let me just read some of the key features in here. A neo-noir mystery set in 1987, 5 playable characters who can work together or get on each other's nerves, not a walking simulator. Satisfying puzzles intertwined with twisty turny story that will stay with you. One of the bullet points is a joke every 2 minutes guaranteed, and then an asterisk, not a guarantee. But so basically what this game is, it's like a murder mystery. So, and if you look at the screenshots of this game, the pixel art on this game is just gorgeous. Like it really it animates really well, and the voiceover is it's a little campy. It's a little bit like maybe not always in a good, you know how these games can go, right? Where the voiceover is sometimes like, okay. But this one in particular is it is very tongue in cheek. It knows what it's doing. It's being goofy about it. There is a really vulgar clown in this game named Ransom the Clown, and he's basically Krusty the Clown. Like is basically what like the sort of stereotype in this game. I really like, here's the thing is that I don't usually spend a whole lot of time in these games, but I really enjoy it. The interface the controls, I'm not a huge fan of. Like if you're going to play this game, I think you need to do yourself a favor and play it in handheld mode, because then you can use the touchscreen. Right. So if you pull up the, like, I'll show just kind of a screenshot here that's on the eShop. I'll turn my camera on for just a second. So on here, you see how there's like these sort of different commands here. And then you've got different items here. And so in order to open a gate, you would literally drag open to the gate, and then the character will go and drag it or whatever. Right. Which works. I'm going to turn my camera off because I'm on my phone. It works great on the handheld mode. If you are doing that with the standard controls, though, like with a controller, you literally have to like D-pad your way over to the thing and then use this control stick to move over. It's just, it's very clunky. It's like using a controller, like an analog stick to do a pointer, like mouse pointer controls. It's not great. So that's why I say I can recommend this game, but I will recommend this game on mobile, not on the Switch. For $20, I feel like it might be a bit too much, especially if you can get it for half that price. And considering the best way to play this game is with a touchscreen, that's the way you should be playing it anyways. So cool. Thimbleweed Park, I like it, but I'm going to give it a thumbs up, but only if you're doing it on a mobile device and not on the Switch.
Right on. Okay, great. And probably the last game and Jesse, I know that this is probably one of the ones that people want to hear most about. So let's still try and keep it relatively short for time, so we're not a 5-hour podcast this week. Jesse, SteamWorld Dig 2, you got a copy early. Thank you very much to our good friends at Imogen Forum for providing us a review copy. You're a couple hours in. Can you just give us some quick impressions on it?
Yeah, well, before you do, Quest for Dungeons was $8.99 and released for the Switch, 3DS, and Wii U. Okay, SteamWorld Dig 2, which will be released starting tomorrow or today, depending on your time zone, for $19.99. It's if you liked the first SteamWorld Dig, it's kind of more of the same. The story is a direct continuation from the first. And even if you've never played the first, you'll get enough exposition to realize what happened. The game does get a little bit chatty, but it's not like Octopath Traveler chatty where there's 30 minutes of dialogue before you do anything. It's like 2 minutes of talk and then you play for a while, then 2 minutes of talk and you play for a while. So it's more spread out. So I'm enjoying what my playthrough so far. And I did play through the original Dig and finished it. So, but I forgot pretty much everything about it. So. It's almost like I haven't played it at all.
So if I kind of got bored of the gameplay cycle of the original SteamWorld Dig, where it's just like dig, 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 go back, dig, 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 go back, dig, 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 go back. Like, is that basically all this is again? Or
you're
like,
still are they, doing it? Yeah.
Are they making it more interesting or more fun?
There is very different areas to explore. It's not just pretty much dig down until you find the bottom. They do have you do more sideways exploring versus just vertical. But it's still essentially more of that. They do introduce a fast travel. I don't remember if the first one had it or not. So you find these blocked tubes that you can hit to unblock them and let you go back to the top at any time, and then from there or to any of the other ones that you've unlocked. I think I've opened up like 6 or 7 of them so far, so I can pretty much go anywhere I want, in the areas that I've already explored. And it does have about 20 or 30 minutes in, you do get like a map, like a world map you unlock. That's kind of, you actually see everything you've explored in one shot, with scrolling around and zooming. So I was kind of impressed with, I remember starting the game way over here, even though I'm over this side now.
Cool. So at this point, can you provide a thumb up recommendation? What are you thinking?
I'm thinking an up. I'm liking this game and planning on finishing it before going back to Rabbids to
perfect.
Knock out those challenges that I'm missing.
Awesome. Good. And obviously a lot of people are very interested in this game as well. So, it's hitting the eShop today. I think it's $19.99 in the USD as well. So it's great. All right. So that's what we've been playing. A lot of games we've been playing that took up a lot of time, but guys, let's jump into maybe Postman, just grab a couple of these really quickly.
Yeah. We found it. All right. So, of course, Postman is brought to you by... is it still brought to you by whatupbox.com? Is that still a thing?
It is.
Sure it is.
Sure. Yeah. We like those guys, right? Cool. So whatupbox.com, of course, is our wonderful people who send us geeky stuff every month. And if you use the code NintendoDads, then they will send you a free pie. No, they won't do that. They will give you $3 off. Yeah, not actually a free pie. They will send you, all sorts of good stuff every month, and they will do it for $3 less for your first month if you use the code NintendoDads. And even better is that they will send us money. So do it. And we will all benefit from your patronage of oneupbox.com. So support them, support us, support the show. Sweet stuff.
Everybody wins.
Yep. There you go. And all you got to do is just do that. So thank you so much, OneUpBox, for your support of the show. All right. So let's get into these emails here, fellas. First up, we have this from Michael. Says, hey guys, I have a question as someone that has not yet purchased a Switch, but is planning on it at some point. As I see the stock of all these different accessories when I walk into the store, there seems to be a lot out there to buy. If someone is buying a Switch now or in the future, what are the essential things you would say to get along with the console? Thanks and keep up the great work, Michael.
All right, everyone, so name just one thing.
Yeah, I would say it would depend on what your family looks like or something. Justin, are you in a rush, by the way, dude? It is like only 11:17 right here, man. Like, you need to simmer down and like enjoy the ride, my man. So let's just say, I would say, depending on what you're going to be using it for, I would say either a second pair of Joy-Cons or a Pro Controller, one of those two, depending on what your use case is going to be. If it's going to be a family console for the most part, then I would say get the Joy-Cons. If it's going to be mainly for you yourself, then get the Pro Controller. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but.
Yeah, I'm going to second that. A Pro Controller, and I know Mikey, he's a personal friend of mine. Pro Controller for him is going to be the way to go.
Cool.
But I would add to that a secondary dock.
Yeah, if that's something that is going – I still don't have one, but that actually I wish I did, because then I could just leave
it. The cool thing about it is being able to take it like, oh, we're going to bed, and the kids are going to bed, but I don't want to finish my game, but I want to lay in bed – and play my game. So I take it and drop it in my dock in my bedroom, mm-hmm. and just pick up where I was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nice. To go along with that too, if you don't want to get it, like on day one, I bought a USB-C cable, and you have to get a charging, you know, like those USB charging bricks. If you get one that is, I think it's over 3 amps, then it will charge your Switch. It charges mine. I know that. And so I actually have a third party charger. So I just plug it in with just the USB cable in the bottom, and it works fine too. So if you don't want to buy the whole $100 or whatever set, then you can just buy a USB-C cable. And I think my little charging brick was like $20 maybe. It wasn't too bad. So that's something you can do as well. Jesse, what about you, man? Would you suggest something?
All right. Well, I got two things in mind, but the first thing I'll go with is if you do go with extra Joy-Con, I'd recommend like an external charging dock for the Joy-Con. Mm. Yeah, I think they come in like a 2-slot or a 4-slot, mm-hmm. depending on how many Joy-Con you have.
Yeah, or either that, or alternatively, if you really want to get I actually have the charging grip, so you can plug a USB cable into the top of the charging grip.
I forgot all about that, but I don't own it, so that's probably why. Yeah.
So, but
I would actually, as somebody who owns the charging grip and one of the charge block things, I would actually say that the charge block is probably a better purchase.
Mm. Yeah.
And the reason for that is because it does stow away so easily, whereas the grip.
You've got to have the cord dangling.
You've got it. Yeah, you got to have the cord dangling. And if you're wanting to play with it, then you're tethered to the dock, or you're tethered to a brick in the wall. With a charge block, you know, you put your Joy-Cons in there, you leave them, you forget about them, you come back later, you play with them.
Yeah. Yep.
Gentlemen, is there any brands that you might recommend for people for any of this stuff?
Yeah. The Nyko charge block, for both the Pro Controller and the Joy-Cons are excellent. And Nyko actually has two of those. One of them is like the actual click in Joy-Con thing, you know, like from the top that holds four. This is the newer product that they have, which is a charge block. We actually have a review over it at YouTube that I did. And you can go over there and check that out. But I would, it's $20. So it's actually pretty affordable as well.
I'm going to look up the block that I had. Or that I ordered. So somebody else, if anybody else has anything.
Sure. I would recommend a good carrying case for your Nintendo Switch, right? Because it is a mobile device. You're going to want to take it with you. You're going to want to throw it in your knapsack or your, you know, man satchel, whatever you want to call it. So I would recommend a good hard case for the Nintendo Switch. I would actually recommend one by Snakebite is the company that I use. And it's like, I have a hard shell case. Cost about $20, but I would definitely recommend a good case. You should be able to, there's usually some spots there to store some games, store some cables. So that'd be a huge recommendation for me as well. And I think one of the things I think everyone here has is probably screen protectors, that you can actually put on, much like you on your iPhone or your iDevice as well. Those are definitely recommended.
Oh, absolutely. Especially like my screen protector totally has scratches from the dock on it. Like that's absolutely a thing. That it does have on it. So By the way, my power block that I have on here, it is currently $18.99 Canadian on Amazon. It is the Quick Charge 3.0 PowerPort Plus by Anker, A-N-K-E-R. It's like a quick charge one, and I think I'm trying to remember what the amperage is on this thing, but it's, I think it's 2.4 is what it says, up to 2.4 amps. So it's not too, you want to have one that's going to be able to, charge it well enough, especially because the friggin' switch is a beast, but, it will definitely charge. It'll charge your phone in about 5 minutes too, by the way. So I don't know if 5 minutes is it, but so definitely, Justin, something like that.
To follow up with your screen protector thing, there are a lot of different options for screen protectors that are out there, but I would recommend the AM film or M film tempered glass screen protector from Amazon. You can currently get a 2-pack of those in the United States for $8.99.
Nice.
Normally $30. And I have put these on both the switch that I own personally and the one that I own for our ministry at church, and would gladly recommend them. The glass is so well done on these, and it's so easy to put on. It's like just putting an extra screen on the switch.
Yeah. Very cool.
And actually looking at our YouTube chat, Roy actually recommends a micro SD card.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that was my second recommendation.
There you go.
And the reason why is, even if you plan on going, I'm going to be one of those all physical guys. NBA 2K18 has a 6 gig save file.
Wow.
And there's some other games coming out that'll only be partial games on the cart with downloadable content to fill the holes. You're still going to want an SD card, yeah, even if you're going off.
I actually think that it also has a 16 gigabyte download for the card.
Well, not only that, but like, yeah, even I think Doom, we found out this week that Doom is, even if you buy the physical retail copy, it only has a single player mode, and if you want to play online multiplayer, you have to download it, which means you have to download the entire multiplayer mode onto your SD card, even if you buy a physical. So that is something that is definitely that you'll definitely want to keep your eyes on for sure.
Then of course it's got a great library of digital only games.
Oh, totally.
As you've heard us talk about for the last half hour.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. So, right on. Well, thanks, Mikey, for your, can I call you Mikey? Yeah, sure I can. I don't know. So that is,
sure you can.
So that's the accessories, for the Switch. Right on. Next up, we have a question from Twitter from @mathman1024. That's Ryan. How do you respond to a console gamer who doesn't know what the Nintendo Switch is?
Slap them and walk away.
I would just say and then walk away. Yeah, exactly.
So, I kind of need to know the context of the conversation.
No,
you know, like, why does he not know what the Switch is? Like, is he simply an Xbox fan who doesn't stay connected to anything, or a PlayStation fan, or has he just been living under a rock since the last, 6 months?
I heard ColecoVision.
So you keep that video from last October on your phone and just say, hey, just watch this.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Or you just pull it out of your bag and you just say, hey, check this out. And then say, hey, I could plug this into my TV right now and play it right now. I don't know. Except there's probably something to be said about pearls before swine at that point. So, yeah, I don't know. Any other thoughts on that? Why would you like, is there any good reason not to know at this point?
Well, like at this, yeah, I was going to say at this point, how could you not know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been so much advertising with it too. There's been,
I just read an article yesterday that Nintendo spent $4.5 million in August alone.
Wow.
I believe it.
Advertising.
You know, I record a bunch of like Saturday morning Cartoon Network programs, and I'm normally fast forwarding through the commercials. But as I'm doing it, I'm seeing Switch commercials. There's a Mario Kart. There's a Splatoon. Things like that.
Absolutely.
So there are commercials out there aimed at the kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on. All right. How are we doing on time, guys? Do we want to get one more email in? What do we think? How are we doing? Let's do one more.
Yeah, let's get one more.
All right, Marty, you want to read this one? Let's go with Kevin.
Sure. Kevin from St. Louis writes to us, "Hey, dads, listening to your podcast last week inspired me to check my parental control app and wanted to let you know I played 12 days in August with an average of an hour a day. My most played game was Splatoon 2. I also have 26 games played on my system, not including demos, and four more games I haven't even opened yet. But my question is this: how do you find time to balance work, family, and other responsibilities with video games? I would also like to comment that I've only owned one Nintendo system, the Dreamcast, and this is the first time I have owned more games than I actually have time to play." So the actual question here is, how do you balance adulting and Nintendo?
I saw this animated GIF online the other day. I mean, you see it a lot, but it's based on like business, where it's like the project is can be cheap, free, cheap, quality, and like time, right? And like only two of those work at the same time, so you can't have something that is high quality and cheap if you want it quickly. You know, for example, I feel like there's probably something like that. That is like sleep and family time and work or something is in there. For me, I usually it's a balance of the two, where you have to have. I think there's a couple of things. Quite frankly, sleeping less than I should is one, and also looking for opportunities to play with family. And also having a family that, you know, it's just kind of part of the family that people play games, even if it's just by yourself. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on this? Like Marty, which on the slider here, like where do you find time?
I think this is kind of a question that hits home for me more than any other, because I do have to so closely watch like my time and scheduling, and my schedule a lot of times is so up in the air. Like I could be called tomorrow, and anybody who works a job where you're quote on call knows this, you know, get a call at 2 a.m. and go somewhere, you know, or have to go to the hospital or have to go to somebody's house. And so I read a book not long ago, and I think I want to say the name of the book is, and this actually has some relevance here. I want to say it's Michael Kelly.
Okay.
The book is called Off Balance, and it's called Off Balance: Getting Beyond the Work Life Balance Myth to Personal and Professional Satisfaction. And basically what Michael Kelly says in this, or Matthew Kelly, I'm sorry, Matthew Kelly says in this book is that a balanced life is a myth, and anyone trying to lead it is only going to run themselves into the ground, because there's going to be times where you focus more on your family and that's what you have to do. And there's going to be times where you have to focus more on your job and that's what you have to do. And that doesn't make either of those things bad. And when we talk about a balanced life, we make one of those things bad. We either say, well, I've been spending too much time with my family, I've really got to work. Well, that makes your family bad. Mm-hmm. And or I've been spending too much time with my job and I need to spend more time with my family. Well, then that makes your job bad.
Yeah.
Where the problem with that is you may really like your job. You may really be good at your job and you may love work. But it just makes you feel bad about it. And so what he's basically saying is that it's not the basic principle that I kind of walked away from the book was quality over quantity.
Absolutely.
And I think that when we think about our time as dads, as workers, as husbands, as ourselves, there's going to be some times where we just have to step back and say, you know what, this is going to cost me somewhere else, but I need some of that quality time here. Mm-hmm. I need some quality time at my job, or I need some quality time with my kids or with my spouse or with video games for myself. And it's okay. You know, I think we kind of live in a culture where like taking time for ourselves can kind of be a little bit of an anathema. Like it's just kind of like a like it's selfish. How dare you? You know, you've got you. And like I hear that a lot, like from websites and things like that. How dare you take time for yourself? You've got kids. Yeah. On the other hand, what I want to say is good for you that you take time for yourself, even when you have kids, because what that does is it lets you charge up so that you can go give your best in other places.
I'm trying to remember where I'm trying to remember where I heard it, but I can't remember where the quote came from, but you know, the best gift that you can give to your children is your own happiness. Right. And I think that that like that is such a like there are so many people who run themselves into the ground and then they come home and it's like, oh, OK, well, now I can't do anything and I can't play with my kids and I can't have fun. And, you know, going to what you were saying, too, Marty, with that idea of balance, I'm having this. See, I'm going into therapist mode here a little bit, but I'm this is what I do. Right. So I'm imagining like this sort of scale here, and we have this sort of idea that in order to have work-life balance, that somehow it's time that is the indicator there, or it's time that is what is actually balancing. And that's not at all how a scale works, right? You could have like a huge pile of feathers over on one side and like a freaking, you know, tiny little weight on the other side, and it's going to balance out. Like you're saying with quality versus quantity, right? Where it's like, really, I think the research would say that you probably need to have, I wish I knew exactly what the research was on this, but like quality one-to-one interaction time with your child is nowhere nearly as high as you might think. You know, if you are absently sitting on the couch with your family for 2 hours, it didn't do nearly as much good as if you got on the floor with them for 20 minutes and played Lego. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where you're actively engaged, you have their full attention. That is, and intentionally looking for those opportunities in order to engage with your kids. And not only that, but looking like one of the things when I was a graduate student, I actually had a like I've talked about before, I have ADHD. And so time management was a really difficult thing for me. And I was like, you know, but like, I always feel bad when I'm playing video games and I just want to, and she's like, what's wrong with playing video games? Just put it in your schedule, like an hour and a half right here. This is my time for video games. And when you make your schedule for the week, you block that time off and you say, nobody's allowed to touch this time. If my professor wants a meeting with me, sorry, I have an appointment and it's with Mario. Right. Like that, that is how, like, if you are going to, and obviously you've got to know your own limits here and what your needs are. But I really love what you're saying, Marty, about like getting over that idea that you're not allowed to spend time for yourself and enjoying things for yourself. And it doesn't have to, it won't be as much time as you probably want it to be. But if you give yourself permission to schedule that time, and just, you know, if a meeting comes up, you say, oh, sorry, you know what, you have a different time? Because that's my time to do, you know, I mean, a lot of people will do this with scheduling their week and things like that. And being really introspective and reflecting on how am I doing? How is my mental health? How is my, how is my week going? Am I feeling overwhelmed? Do I need to literally schedule in time to sit back and relax? In order to be able to play some video games and relax, then that's what you should do. But you should never also treat video games like they are an end in and of themselves. Like you should be wanting to do that because it's enjoyable. And if it's like this huge backlog, for example, and you're like, oh man, I have to play through this, and it's stressing you out, dude, like that's not great either.
Let it go.
Right. Like,
yeah. So, like, and the thing like, too is like, what I don't want people to hear us saying is it's totally okay to neglect something in favor of another, because like when you were talking about the picture of the scale, like what I got is like the way that you balance a scale is not by taking something from one side and moving it to the other. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to take away from this so I can add to the other.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're taking away. You're eating away at that thing. That's not balance, you know. And eventually, I think what.
Did I lose
everything? You're right, Zach. Sometimes we're up till two in the morning. Yeah. Playing video games, but that's what we do because we like it. It gives us life. It makes us happy.
And other people,
the same can be applied to other forms of entertainment, not just video games. Because I consider, you know, like when people, you know, the big argument to throw people like throw at me is, you're too old to play video games. I'm like, are you too old to read a book?
Yeah,
it's a form of entertainment. How I do it on my time is my business. I don't tell you that you can't watch TV if you can't go to a movie.
I couldn't go to sleep last night because I was reading this book. I stayed up till 3 in the morning. I wish people would look at them and be like, well, how irresponsible of you.
Right. And so, sometimes we will have a binge day in video games. My daughters binge Netflix all the time. It's as long as they fit everything else in that they need to fit, no matter what they do. Fine. I don't care.
Yeah.
As long as their schoolwork is done, as long as they go to work, if they are employed and not get fired, that's, you know, they know what their schedule has to look like. And I know what my schedule has to look like. My schedule includes making sure that they get on their schedule on time because they're all teenagers and that none of them with their driver's license yet. And I know this. So I know that eats into my gaming time at times.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. I think I love this topic. I think this is great. I think that there are so many. I guess like to sum it all up, what is important to you, really? Like I know we spend a lot of time getting together to talk about video games, to obsess about them, to enjoy them, and especially now with podcasts available to us. You can literally spend hours and hours and hours and hours and hours every week listening to people talk about video games, and it can give you tunnel vision and blinders, you know, and it can almost make you realize or sort of convince you that they're more important than they really are. You know what I mean? And like, just take that time to refocus and think, okay, family's still number one. And all of those sorts of things. I think that's so important. So, Kevin, huge thanks for the question, man. Any final thoughts as we kind of wrap up? Justin, you haven't said much about this.
Well, I had a really good statement, and then you guys kind of went off on something much smarter than what I was going to say. So it felt really dumb. When you're quoting authors and throwing out psychology degrees, and my statement of, I took the Switch with me on Friday to get a haircut, and I brought my daughter with me. And while we were waiting for a haircut, we played Switch together.
Well, and that's exactly it, though.
But right? that's the beauty of it, though. It doesn't have to be smart. I mean, that's amazing.
Right? Like, and how like awesome it was, that it, you we were just, yeah, we were just having like it, every time I go get a haircut, she's always like, "Can I come with you?" I was like, "Sure." And she always like, "Can I bring the Switch?" I was like, "Sure." And I don't typically bring the Switch everywhere we go, but it's kind of like, yeah, we'll do that. And when we got there, it was a queue of like five people waiting for haircuts. So we busted out of the Switch and we played Co-op Rabbids. By the way, Co-op Rabbids, if you haven't tried that, that is freaking awesome.
Still want to talk. I need to talk my kid into trying it with
me. I had so much, to be honest, that's the only way I want to play Rabbids right now is Co-op Rabbids with my daughter because I had so much fun doing it. But we just busted off Joy-Con and we walked through a level together playing Co-op Rabbids. And that was, you know, it was kind of like, repurposing time, I guess.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I mean, so you could have sat there and very boringly waited for your haircut, but I wouldn't call it repurposing even. I think a better word is redeeming.
Reclaiming
you redeemed
it.
That time with your daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's other things where we could sit down and read a book together for sure, but it's just something that she and, she kind of enjoys and she likes that one-on-one time and she likes, and I think it goes back to, I think Jesse's comment too, or Marty's, like, if you're a family that games, or if your wife is passionate about it, or your daughter, or your kids are like playing video games together, it's easier to kind of like use that as an event or time, right? Like, we've sat around here as a family. Let's play Death Squared, right? Let's all play. It's a, and sure, I've got to review it for the show. And sure, we're passionate about the game, but like, yeah, let's do it as a family, right? Mario Party, Mario Kart 8, ARMS, any of those games, Splatoon, they're so excited for Splatoon. And when is Odyssey coming out? Because they know that we'll play it together as an event. And that's one of the reasons why I think for me, like when I think about my time, that's why I think I lean towards Nintendo so much and Nintendo first party products and games that are family friendly. Because I know that that's an that's an easier time, right? I can be like, hey, does everyone want to play? And it can become an event together. So you're kind of satisfying a couple of things as opposed to like, hey, I want to play Doom right now. So yeah. Everyone, you know, either want the big TV or give me the Switch, right? Like it's just, I've just never kind of been that kind of player. I want to kind of make it more communal. So that's kind of just how I balance. But I would always say, you know, one of the things, again, the thing you want to put first is family.
Yep.
Priority number one for timing, right? That's that is your key thing. And I think it also goes back to seasons, right? Yeah. Sometimes there's seasons of like, and I'm not just talking about like weather seasons, but like seasons where you have a lot of time to game and other times where you don't.
You're talking about
sometimes on the show here when we're talking, like, you know, you'll hear one or two of us be like, I didn't play this week anything because I was up to my eyeballs and work, or we had family trips or this and that. So yeah, you know, I don't know. That's my commentary. I also think it's the reason you have so much of a backlog is because there's a lot of great games out right now. That's tough too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Right on, man. Well, hey, I really enjoyed this discussion and this question. Huge thanks, Kevin. And, if, you know, let us know, guys, if you want us to cover more topics like this, or if you have any other sort of follow-up questions that's been making you think about things, let us know, and we will.
I know this episode is getting a little long, but I think those last questions will be quick, so I think we should hit it.
Should we do it? All right, let's just get it out.
Just because Justin's on.
Let's do it. Do you want to? I actually, my soundboard died. My phone died, so so I can't even play it. So unfortunately, but anyways, continue. Go ahead, Jesse.
All right, I'll read it. Hey, Undads, I want to say you're doing an awesome job on the show. It's so refreshing to have a family-friendly podcast that I can listen to with my son. We went on a Cub Scout camping trip last week and listened to the podcast during the car ride, both there and back.
And it was only one episode they did that, by the way, there and back, one episode.
My wife said no systems, so of course we snuck in our 3DSs at the Animal Crossing in our tent after lights out. I've been listening to the show since the Switch launch, so I'm behind on some of the inside jokes. My question is this. What's the story behind the Wobble Puppet audio clip?
Thanks again, gosh.
And keep up the good work. From Mike Ryan.
Okay, so the Wobble... I want to see if I can find... It'll take me forever to find the actual video of Justin doing the... So basically what it was... Justin, do you want to tell it? I feel like maybe it's better if you tell it.
Yeah, I mean, so we were doing some giveaway for our monthly giveaways, and I went out to buy a couple items. I went to like the EB Games and bought some. They had some Pokemon stuffed animal thing and some cards. So we were kind of doing a together like a Pokemon giveaway box. And I don't know Pokemon. I never really grew up with it, so I don't really know the characters' names. So I grabbed this thing that looked like a blue water bottle, essentially, with some weird legs.
It was a Wobbuffet.
Like wobble puppet wobble, and I was like basically like I didn't sound it out beforehand, didn't check the actual title of the thing. I just kind of like on the video wobble puppet wobble puppet thing. So I just moved forward, like it was just that was the way I pronounced it, and so that was how it got snipped, and now it's kind of the running joke. I have a really hard time sometimes pronouncing weird names. So yeah, that was how Wobble Puppet came up. But now no one lets me forget that one.
Yeah.
I had a friend recently sent me from Lethbridge. I hadn't talked to him very much. And he sends, he was talking to my wife and he sends her the picture of the Wobble Puppet. And he basically says, ask Justin what this is. And so she's like, what does this mean? I was like, oh, damn it. So yeah.
Yeah. When I caught my first Wobbuffet in Pokemon Go, I just got a screenshot and sent it to him. I'm like, what I found.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get jarred pretty good for it, but it's all in good fun. So we, you know, we say a lot of stupid things on a microphone, and that's it's a problem of both being recorded, both in video and audio. It's always there.
Yeah. So, actually, you know, yeah. I don't know if you guys are going to be able to hear this, but I have one from last week. Here, let's see if we can find it.
I kind of sometimes I like to poop on things that you know people like because it's.
There's them again.
There you go. No, can you hear that? You guys probably didn't.
No, I didn't hear it. No.
Okay, so while the audio listeners at home heard Marty saying that he likes to poop on things, so that is going on to my soundboard just like everything else. All right, so yeah, so you know, things out of context, they're always better. That's how I
absolutely
yeah. So huge thanks, Mike, for bringing that up. And we will always treasure it in our hearts. So right on. Any final news as we kind of wrap up, guys, or any final thoughts before we wrap up the show? I'm going to pull up some music here.
Sure. I would just say a couple things for people to remind you about. Retro Rewind for September is Castlevania 3, and prepare yourself because October is Metroid Prime. A couple other things to keep in your mind, guys. We're going to be releasing an episode on this Sunday, September 23rd? 24th. 24th. And it is, we just did a great interview with Ben remember we said his last name? Pertoli? Ben Pertoli. There it is. Ben Pertoli, author of 101 Games to Play Before You Grow Up. It's about an hour-long interview we did with him, so that's why we're going to put it as a separate episode. Fantastic book, an essential book that you need to pick up if you are raising little gamers like we are. We cannot highly recommend this enough. We are actually going to do a giveaway for a copy. We have a review on our review copy. The publishers provide us a copy to give away, so look for it on social media. Look for, and we're going to do a draw or some kind of giveaway, so we'll engage on that, but that's going to be really awesome. So again, that's coming this Sunday. Great interview. This Friday and Saturday, I'm going to be in Birmingham, England, not Germany, Birmingham, England for EGX, which is the biggest UK video game conference. If you are at EGX and want to connect with me, send us a message via Twitter on our Nintendo Dads account. We're going to kind of try to meet up with a couple of fans who are there. So if you see me there also, feel free to stop by. We've got a ton of interviews and gameplay already lined up. And so some great content. I will be vlogging every single day. Watch for our Instagram, Twitter. There'll be tons of media coming out for me over the next 2 to 3 days on EGX. So follow us there. And then my final thing I would remind you about is Extra Life. So Extra Life is running November 4th, and Extra Life is all about raising funds to help the Children's Miracle Network, playing video games for 24 hours. We have a dedicated Nintendo Dads team already, and we would love for you to be a member of that. You can go over to Extra Life, register, find our team, Nintendo Dads _ESL. I think it's ESL, Extra Life, or maybe just, sorry, EL. EL. We have a goal of about $1,700 we want to raise. We love your help.
Right on.
And I talked with my son about this, and he's willing to do a speed run of Mario 64. He's actually got his time down to just over 30 minutes.
Wow.
With a 16 star collection. And he knows a way to beat Link to the Past in 5 minutes.
What?
He's in his live stream both of those events.
Right on, dude. Well, hey, everybody, thank you so much as we wrap up the show here. Thank you. So you guys aren't hearing the music, but the music is playing you out, us out. So huge thank you, everybody, for a wonderful show this week. Thank you once again to all of our patrons over at patreon.com/NintendoDads. And for all of the wonderful things that you guys do, especially to our producers, Dave, Sheldon, and John. And if you want to follow us on all of the social medias, you can do so on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Nintendo Dads. You can email us nintendodads@gmail.com. If you want to watch our videos, you can look on Twitch or YouTube and search for Nintendo Dads. You will find us. If you want to call in and leave us a voicemail, you can do so at 929-25-NDADS. That's 929-256-3237. Huge thanks to OC Remix for our music throughout the show, as well as to both Carter Johnson and Adam Leonard for amazing artwork. And if you want to change the world, which I know that you do, go over to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever. Leave us a 5-star review. Written reviews are even better. And, of course, if you want to subscribe, you can do so on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and, of course, VGTribune.com. For me, for Justin, for Jesse, and for Marty, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Nintendo Dads.